Okay, so let's do this podcast, Jeff.
Let's do this podcast.
So I got to tell you a story. Like, this is a good story. So I get a DM on Twitter, which I can't find anywhere now. I don't know what happened to it. This person wrote to me, and I wanted to write back to them, but I can't find the message. I don't know if they deleted it or not. And they just said, you know, we're big fans of the 31 Thoughts podcast, and how come you didn't give us a summer goodbye one? So I was going to write to the guy and say, you know, we're doing a summer goodbye one, but I can't find it. And he also goes, by the way, we also named our house cat after you.
31?
I hope that's what it was. Because I'm not a huge cat person. But, you know, I was flattered. I was like, you know, hey, I was going to send the person a note saying, look out, there's a summer podcast coming.
Elliot will call this the summer series of podcasts.
Okay.
So we are going to release a number of podcasts over the summer, many of which we have already recorded, including this one. There will be a podcast also with Joel Quenneville. There'll be a podcast with George Peros and with Steve Mayer. And then perhaps by then, we'll be ready to get back to work on a more full-time basis and do more podcasts that are more current. In the meantime, this will be the big wrap-up.
You should mention Kadri because that's the lead.
Kadri is the lead. Yes. Nazem Kadri, you'll hear from him in a couple of moments on the podcast. And he says some pretty interesting things specifically about not waiving his no trade to go to the Calgary Flames. Mm-hmm. You'll hear the interview a little bit later on. But that's an eyebrow raiser, Elliot Friedman.
Well, it was just interesting, his reasoning. And I don't want to spoil it to anyone. And first of all, I appreciate the fact he was honest about it. You know, there had been lots of rumblings that there was a deal in place with the Flames. And, you know, he basically confirmed it. But I want to leave it to him to explain it because I thought his reasoning was really interesting.
And we'll follow up with that after the interview. In the meantime, there's so many teams to go over right now and so many issues because we haven't been on since before free agent day. But let's just begin by talking about the boogeyman, and that's the offer sheet.
Yep.
And we saw one, and it was Montreal, and some snickered at it. You can understand the logic behind it, front-loaded $21 million in the first 12 months, but Carolina matched with ease. Now Aho is a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. Your thoughts on that offer sheet, and then we'll get to subsequent offer sheets and other group twos.
Well, first of all, my belief is, so Sebastian Aho is represented by Jerry Johansson, who also represents Braden Point. My belief is Montreal wanted to do Braden Point first. He was their first choice. And people say, oh, Point, did he reject an offer sheet? No, I don't think it ever got to that point. But I think Braden Point has made it very clear he wants to be a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think it was conveyed to Montreal that Point would not be interested in doing that. So target number two was Aho. And they made the offer. And the big winner in this is Aho. Because from what I understand about Carolina and their offers were this. It was 8 times 7.5, or it was 1 year. Now, I heard Aho had countered with 5 times 9.5, but Carolina had no interest in that. Mm-hmm. So Carolina was doing, the word on the street was they were doing 8 or 1. So Aho is the big winner here, and his agent does a good job because he gets him to UFA in 5 years, which is something that Carolina was not interested in doing. So he's the winner. I have a lot of thoughts about Bergevin in this one, and this is me playing amateur psychologist. But if you watch Bergevin's media conferences in the last few years, as things have been tougher in Montreal, he gets really passionate in defending the organization and the moves he makes. I went back and I watched the media conference after they announced the Aho. He wasn't like that.
If the deal works out, it's obviously great for the team. If it doesn't, you're left with a lot of salary cap money not spent without the player. Do you have a plan B in case this doesn't work out?
Well, you know what? This shows to our fans that Jeff Molson ownership, that we want to be a good hockey team. We want to win, and we feel that this is the guy that we identified that was going to help. He's a young player. You take a risk when you do that. Like you mentioned, guys are getting signed. But when you have that cap space tied up, you can't go out and spend it, and then you get the player, then you're in bad position. So you need to be smart, and that's the risk we take. Yeah, it's the chair is going to be gone by the time. But that's the business we're in. But we felt even though if it doesn't happen, we still have a really good hockey team.
Are you worried about reaction from other GMs? I'm sure Hull's not very happy with you. Or this is something that hasn't been done very often.
I understand. It's part of the CBA. It's within the rule. And I'm responsible to Jeff Molson and our fans. And that's what I'm here to do. And like I always said, it's not about just spending foolishly. It's about spending on the right people. And we felt that Sebastian was the right people to go after.
In the past, you've said that you haven't really been a big fan of throwing big contracts at players on July 1st. And so in this case here, what was the tipping point in your mind that made you decide to go with this type of tactic?
Well, because usually, you know, by the time guys get to, if you don't go offer sheet, they go to free agency, they're older, you know. And some guys are, you know, good values, but we felt this player, at Sebastian, 21 years old, was the right target for us.
He was not as emotional as I've seen him, and it kind of made me wonder if he really thought that this was the best idea. First of all, I want to say this. I love that the Canadians did it. They made news. They did something different. It's great. Whether you like offer sheets or not, or you like the offer or not, it was great for hockey. Like, basketball was, went through crazy town, and this was something different for hockey. It kicked up interest. It was good for the fans. It was different. You know, the sport needs more of that. So I support why they did it. I just got the sense that Bergevin's heart was not all in it. And that's why they didn't go up to the four first rounders or the next highest level. I think at the end of the day, even if he got the player, I think he was worried about how much compensation they were going to have to pay or give.
But why? They have the space and they need that position.
You know,
and they,
because, you know, the NHL, it's such a, this league is such a crapshoot now. Like, you know, every year there's teams you don't expect that miss the playoffs. There's teams you don't expect that make the playoffs. I think what happened with Ottawa terrifies people. Do you think when Ottawa made that deal with Matt Duchene coming off the game 7 in the Eastern Conference final, they ever thought they'd be in the position they were in?
No.
With Eric Karlsson and that team?
Quite the opposite.
Not a chance. And I think that terrifies people. And plus also, think about it, you're giving up, well, in that case, they would have given up 3 picks. But if you go up, you're giving up 4. And then if you go even higher, you're giving up 4 first-rounders, and you're only guaranteed to have the player for 5 years. Like, basically, it's almost a wash. You know, I understand why they did it. I love that they did it. But I just really got the sense watching Bergevin, his heart wasn't, he wasn't diving into the pool.
I did like the sell job, though.
As an organization, we looked at the closest and we identified that Sebastian was the player. And then after the window opened, we were able to talk. And he wanted to be here in Montreal. He agreed to this. He believed that's a really good offer for him. And he wants to be part of the Montreal Canadiens.
Second question is,
oh yeah,
like the angle on the solid job, Sebastian Aho wants to be here. He wants to be a Montreal Canadian. He believes in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like putting those screws. Because the one thing that I keep coming back to on offer sheets is if it's matched, the player has to go back to his team. And we talked to Ryan O'Reilly about this last year on the podcast. You need to go back to your team. And in some ways, you're going back to a team that you already tried to leave.
Yeah.
And it seemed as if very publicly, Marc Bergevin was trying to reinforce that point.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Bergevin thought that the offer sheet was going to get matched, he still wanted it out there that Aho wanted to be a Hab and not a Hurricane.
Absolutely. I thought that was great strategy too. But again, like, you've seen Bergevin combative at his press conferences. He wasn't like that at this one, which I thought was really interesting. So I'm playing amateur psychologist. I think the other thing too is the reason it happened to Carolina is people are still trying to figure out Tom Dundon, right? It became very clear that he was insulted by the belief that he couldn't afford to match it. The people were like, oh, there's $21 million in the first year and Carolina can't afford that. Tom Dundon is worth a lot of money. And he clearly was insulted by the fact that people didn't think he could match it. But what I think Montreal was challenging was not that he could match it. And what everyone's trying to figure out, a couple owners told me this, is that he puts a value on things and he doesn't like to exceed the value. And there's no team in the league that pays less for its front office, its coaching, and its scouting staff than Carolina.
Mike Felucci punted and he was what, $500,000?
$650,000
wins the Calder Cup and no thanks. That's too much sugar in the coffee.
I shouldn't say that there's no team, but they're low.
Yeah.
Like they are known for being low. And that's because he says, he's told people that, like, this is crazy. Like, in the private sector, these guys are making way more money than they'd make in the private sector. And that's what he believes. So for some other teams, when they watch this, they saw it as a test of how Dundon valued the best player. And they think that's why Montreal was willing to do that with Carolina. And they learned that he valued his best player very high. And it did surprise some people that he matched, but they said once that he kind of got challenged, like he couldn't afford it, they knew he was going to match, but they understood what Montreal was thinking. So I found this whole thing fascinating, and I hope we get more.
I was going to say, that's the follow-up question. Do we expect more offer sheets as the summer gets deeper and deeper?
You know, I think what this told everyone was, if you are going to jump in, jump in. Don't tiptoe your way in. Go to the top of the cliff.
Don't worry about first-round picks.
Don't worry about what rocks are in that area. Don't even check. Just dive. That's, I think, when you're
head first. Don't worry how deep the water is.
Now, Marner. So this is where we're taking. You know, Joey Vendetta on our flagship, the Fan 590, sent the world into a tizzy last Friday.
Now you have a team, and the team that I'm hearing is a team that's got the cap space, obviously, and also has the draft picks. And there's a little bit of a history between this team and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And from what I understand, it should happen today. Nothing's guaranteed, but the ownership has approved it, and it could happen as early as today.
Joey, what are your sources saying in terms of a number? Do you know that?
I heard $12.5 million. That's the number that I heard.
This is what I've heard about Marner. And again, you know, everybody's being quiet, so, you know, we'll see how close to the truth this actually is. Last Friday, when Joey said that, everybody was talking about the Islanders. I think there was another team before that. And my belief is that team was Columbus. I think they were thinking about it. From what I heard, and this is not like a fight, like it didn't turn into a bad negotiation. Like someone said, don't frame it as it turned into a fight between Columbus and the agent. I think what happened was, if Columbus was going to do it, it had to be for 7 years. And I think what I heard Marner was looking for, or his side was looking for, was less term than that. And if you're going to go the full four picks,
you're getting 7 years. Well, if you're a team.
Well, you're not giving up four first rounders for 3 or 4 years. You're just not doing that. And I think that's why that one fell to the wayside. But I had multiple people telling me that they thought if anybody was going to do it, it was going to be Columbus.
So would I be off base if I said what the Marner camp is probably looking for is a short-term big money deal that gets as close to walking him to free agency as possible?
Yeah, that's what was the case, I think, in that particular situation.
With the Blue Jackets.
Yes, if that was going to happen.
Is there a fear from the Marner camp then, if they're going to go the offer sheet route, that they don't want an offer sheet that Toronto can match?
Like, again, this is me talking. I think at the end of the day, Jeff, he wants to be a Leaf. I think he wants that more than anything else, and I think they want him. I just think he wants it to be at a big number. He wants to be in the Matthews area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are. Now, with this thing last week, a lot of people were pointing at the Islanders. And the rumor going around was 7 times 12.5. I was really curious when I heard that because I didn't know if Marner would want to sign for term in case Toronto didn't match. I even heard in Toronto, Marner didn't even want that kind of a term. You know, I got to tell you, if that happened, 7 times 12.5 with the Island, I'm not convinced the Leafs would match it.
I don't think they would. I think they'd walk away from it, take the four first-round draft picks, and say, let's go shopping.
If he signs anywhere else for that kind of term, I wouldn't be surprised if the Islanders were high on that list.
You think the Maple Leafs are modeling for life without Marner?
I just think that Kyle Dubas, knowing the way he thinks, I can't imagine like any other GM, you're not thinking about that at this point. You're thinking about both.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, somebody told me they saw John Chayka, Arizona's GM, flying to Toronto yesterday.
Yeah.
He's from the area, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was wondering, is there any chance that he's doing that?
He's going to your old alma mater. Down the 401.
Yeah, he's going to, is there any chance he's coming for a meeting with Marner? And I don't think that's happening, but it was just funny to ask.
What about, let's just sort of run down some of the usual suspects here because none of them have contract yet. And you mentioned Braden Point off the top, you know, perhaps being the target of an offer sheet by Montreal before they turn their attention to Sebastian Aho, whether it's Rantanen, whether it's Tkachuk, whether it's Line A, whether it's Connor, whether it's McAvoy. Who's most intriguing here to you?
Oh, boy. Well, Besser's not eligible for an offer sheet, but now that Vancouver signed Ferland, I'm really curious to see what they're going to be doing.
Getting rid of players.
Is someone going to end up in Utica next year? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm wondering about that. And you get, I think, a little over $1 million comes off your cap if you send a player to the minors. I mean, I think all of these things are fascinating. Like, Tkachuk is so important to Calgary. Rantanen is so important to Colorado.
Is the hold up Marner? Evan wants to see what happens with this deal and then the other deal. Like, that's what I wonder.
Like,
right? Here we are getting to the middle of July.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a couple in Winnipeg. There's Calgary. There's Boston. There's Colorado. Like, big name players. And there's nothing.
And I was asking somebody about this today. And the thing that's already happened, though, is that Matthews and Aho have 5-year deals. So now you're starting to think, am I going to be able to sign a guy for 7 or 8 years?
Mm.
Or are they all going to say, we want that kind of term so we get to free agency sooner and we can see where the new US TV deal goes?
Well, if we can rewind then to Marner for a second, if you're the Maple Leafs, the last thing you want is Marner and Matthews expiring at the same time.
They won't do that. They don't want to do that. They want to avoid that.
So then, what does it become? 4 years and you walk to free agency?
No, they won't do that
either. It's got to be a 6-year deal.
See, I think Toronto and Marner have talked about a short-term deal, 2 or 3 years, and they've talked about 6. I think Marner might want something a little different, but I think that's kind of where they are. You know, here's the thing. What happens if somebody says, okay, we're going to offer sheet someone, but we're not doing it in the summer where they can go 10% over?
Yeah,
we're waiting in October. And I'll tell you, I have one prediction from an agent, actually, who said to me, this is the year where if this goes into November, somebody's missing the full season. He said that what happened with Nylander last year is going to hurt the players. Because they said last year, Toronto decided they were all into the Stanley Cup, so they made the deal at the last minute and gave Nylander a really good deal.
Yeah.
Said there's going to be somebody this year who's going to look at their season in November and say, yeah, we're not caving in at the last second.
It's hindsight, but do you think if the Maple Leafs had a do-over, they'd let Nylander sit for the season?
No, because I think they thought they could win the Cup. I mean, if you don't think you're winning the Cup, yes, but they thought they were going to try to win the Cup. But I do think they regret certain things that happened in the end there. I think they regret just the way things happened last year. It was just a brutal year. And the one thing I think Toronto's looking forward more than anything else is an end to this Marner saga one way or the other. Like, everybody thinks Carolina's lucky. Their situation is over. Like, as Don Waddell said, they don't have to sit there all summer and worry about it. It's over. I think Toronto would like this to be over so they can turn the page and just worry about hockey. But I do think that I was going to say, Jeff, that the players themselves saw what happened to Nylander last year and how poorly he played.
Yeah.
And they said, that's bad for us if it goes, because there's going to be a team next year that's going to decide we're not going to want to pay for 5 goals or a player who's not ready based on what happened last year.
Do you think that Montreal set the marketplace for some of these players with the Aho offer sheet? Or is that irrelevant?
I think the term, I think, is a big deal because now both Matthews and Aho are on 5-year deals. So I think some of these guys are going to say, okay, that's the term, that's the big one now.
All right, we move on. 31 Thoughts brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali. We'll talk about Vancouver, the Canucks' interesting offseason next.
Got another new Canuck to talk about. Vancouver signing Michael Ferland to a 4-year, $14 million contract. The 27-year-old averaged 19 goals, 41 points, and 176 hits in the last 2 seasons with the Flames and Hurricanes. Ferland will have a chance to play in the top 6 with the team while adding some protection for Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, and Quinn Hughes.
Hi, Michael. Welcome to Vancouver. Maybe just lead us off by sort of giving us your thoughts on why you're joining the Vancouver Canucks, why they were the right fit for you.
Yeah, you know, I talked with my wife. You know, I think they got a great young and upcoming team. They got obviously great players in Peterson, Bozier, and Beauvoir. You know, for my style, I think that's a team that I could fit in nicely. You know, they're a young team still, and at the end of the day, me and my wife thought that was the best fit for us, and that's what we chose.
When you think back to that playoff series in 2015 against the Canucks, what do you think of, and how much have you evolved as a player since then?
You know, that was kind of when I got my foot in the door in the NHL. I remember just being wide-eyed playing playoff games in Vancouver and just how beautiful the city was and just the atmosphere in that building. I thought it was pretty exciting. When I first came into the league, I was a bottom six checker. You know, I could finish my checks, and I think over the last few years, I've established I could play with high-end players and, you know, play good with skilled guys also. So, you know, I've learned a lot over the last few years, and I've matured a lot as a player.
Okay, Elliot, it is the, although by the time I say this and this podcast comes out, it may not be the most recent news, but the most recent headline story, $3.5 million, 4 seasons, Vancouver Canucks, Michael Ferland. Now, this is on top of Tyler Myers. Mm-hmm. This is on top of JT Miller. And now this is dovetailing decisions on players like Brandon Sutter and Louis Erickson. Your thoughts on Vancouver?
It's hard not to look at their cap situation and say, okay, you know, what do they got planned here? Somebody's going out. And what I think you're looking at is, you know, Louis Erickson, he wants to go and they want him to go. You know, he's got some control over the situation with his clauses.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they're kind of telling him is if he doesn't play ball, he could be in Utica. That's kind of where we are at this particular point in time. They're going to have to do something, and I think that whole market is kind of fascinated with what it's going to be. I like Ferland. I mean, the only question you have about him is his health, his injuries, but there was a lot of interest in him. I heard Calgary was in on him. I heard Vegas kicked
Calgary wanted him back.
Yes, I heard Vegas was in on him. Someone told me St. Louis was very interested in Ferland. And Vancouver gave him the fourth year, and they got him. But there was a lot of interest in Ferland. And of all the guys who waited later, I think he was the guy who most teams were interested in. And that was because, you know, St. Louis, the way they played in the playoffs, just the heaviness of their team,
mm-hmm.
that player is very attractive again.
Tyler Myers, JT Miller, this is a team that is, when you look at it, like this is a team that says, our division isn't necessarily strong.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe San Jose is going back down to the pack a little bit with the loss of Joe Pavelski. We got a shot at the playoffs.
Well, if you look at it, you've got Vegas, who I think is really good. I still think San Jose is really good. I know Calgary didn't like the way their season ended last year, but I still think they're very good. And then you've got sort of like LA rebuilding, Anaheim rebuilding, Edmonton still finding their feet. I think Arizona is going to be a really interesting team. I think Kessel, I think he is going to have a huge year. So I think you
can. Yeah, is that based on him being comfortable or him
both.
Being with Tocchet? Or
you know he's going to be dynamite this year. You just know he's going to be dynamite this year. Like, to me, on paper, I think the top four teams in the Pacific are, in no particular order, Vegas, San Jose, Arizona, and Calgary. I would put Vancouver ahead of L.A., and I would put Vancouver ahead of Edmonton, and I would put Vancouver ahead of Anaheim right now. So that has them eighth spot, maybe. Maybe.
Okay.
So I think Vancouver is going to be the most fascinating team, one of the most fascinating teams, because it's boom or bust this year with that first round pick they gave up for Miller.
Yep.
This is an enormous year for the Vancouver Canucks.
Is this Vancouver looking at the situation and saying, we have one of the greatest luxuries in the NHL, and that is Elias Pettersson on an entry-level deal?
Absolutely.
We are going to try to maximize this right now.
Yes. I think that is some of that. And not only that, you got Horvat is on a great contract.
Yeah.
Like, that is a great deal. And, you know, in a couple years, you're going to be paying for Pettersson. You're going to be paying for Quinn Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
I think Horvat is a few years, I think it's 4 years away from an extension. I think Pod Colson is going to be a big piece for them in 2 years. I think that was a great pick for that organization. But this is a year where you know everything's on the line there. They're going to be one of the most fascinating stories in the league this year.
Yeah, everything's on the line for the GM, the coach, players that want to stay, like, all of it, this is...
And you get the sense that they're trying to turn their roster over a little bit, obviously.
For sure.
It's going to be a massive year there. A massive year there. And Canucks Twitter, like, I mean, it is crazy town. Like,
yeah. Canucks Twitter is going to be great.
The Myers thing was bananas. Like, when I tweeted out yesterday, it looked like Furlan was crazy. Going there. Like, people are like, I hear it's 5x5. And I was like, I don't think it's 5x5. And they have 4x4. I said, I think it's a little bit less than that. It's like, you know that, like, it's July and that fan base, they're mobilizing. Like, it's going to be... Vancouver's going to be one of the hot spots in the league next year, big time.
Berchi, Vertanen, Erickson, Sutter, where's the room?
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know that changes are coming. You know, Roussel's going to be out for the beginning of the year.
Yep.
You know, that gives somebody a chance to keep a job or something like that. Look, the Erickson thing, it has to end. After what he said about Green, and I know Green was really upset at that, that's going to happen one way or the other. There's just no way. I shouldn't say no way because there's always something can happen, but it's like I can't see how he's on their roster at the beginning of next season. It doesn't make any sense.
How do you read the goalie situation there? Well, Markstrom was coming off a great season.
I thought he was really good. And, you know, I think Demko is a really talented guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't worry about that.
If you're Van, do you redo? Like, do you give Markstrom the extension right now?
If you believe in him, do it now because it's never cheaper, right? If the guy's good, the price never goes down.
Yeah.
That team next year, it's going to be nuts around them.
It's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
For us in Canada, you know, Vancouver with interest around them, that's important.
It's big.
It's big for our network.
Speaking of Vancouver and netminders, the Luongo retirement and cap recapture towards both Florida, but more so Vancouver.
Yeah, that. So I had heard during the draft weekend that they were kind of expecting that they knew it was a real possibility. I'll tell you, I hate this. I hate retro. As a guy who believes in finding loopholes in anything he does, I hate that this happened. I'm really against it. I thought it was unfair and punitive when it happened, but that's the way the world work goes sometimes. I don't like this. I don't think it's right. You know, the deals were legal. I hate that the fact that they went and retroactively penalized these guys. I don't like it at all. But it exists and you have to deal with it and you just have to live with it. That's all. And, you know, like I said, I can't imagine there isn't some way where Luongo is not an ambassador for that team for a long time.
For
The way he handled himself last year after the shooting and the way he was at the awards last year when he stood up and gave that great speech, the great sense of humor he has on Twitter still talking about now he has to wear elastic shorts like the rest of us. Welcome to the real world, Roberto. That guy's going to the Hall of Fame. I think the thing that I really respect about him the most is just that it was a real tough time for him after 2011. He was hurt, like the fans were, like the organization was, and you look at what he did in 8 years in terms of making his life better and making the way people saw him better. Like, that's what life is about. Sometimes life just kicks you in a very bad place and it forces you to eat a giant crap sandwich and you have to pick yourself up and move your feet and get going again. Get out of bed and do something. And that's the biggest respect I have for him, is that it could have crushed him and he didn't let it crush him.
I have all the time in the world for that guy.
Yeah,
I have all the time in the world for Luongo, and I'm with you. Hall of Fame all the way. Florida, his previous team, there were moves, Strawman, Connolly, Achari, but the big one. Bobrovsky comes in, 7-year deal, $10 million a season. Now, the way that I've framed it is this. They were a top 10 team offensively. They had the number 2 power play in the NHL. The problem is they couldn't get saves.
Yeah.
So when you know that you can score, and you can score in bunches, what are saves worth to you? I know the $10 million times 7 is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But what are saves worth to you when you know that you probably should have been a playoff team last year, but the only thing standing in front of that was a save? Don't saves get more expensive?
I remember working on the panel on the day that got done. It was 7x10 in the no move clause for the first 5 years. And, you know, Berkey and Nick were like, oh, I don't like that deal. And I get it. Like, I understand why they feel that way. But I'm with you, Jeff. Like, you know, there are times you have to overpay. And that's why I back everything that Columbus did last year, and I understand why they had to get this guy. If you don't fix that problem, you're still the same. We're watching Tampa Bay, Boston, and Toronto clinch playoff berths at New Year's Day.
Yeah.
You had to do it. And the other thing is, I will say, is that there was a lot of last season I would never have done it for Bobrovsky. And then, you know, after he crawled off the mat in the first period against Tampa.
When he refused to get pulled.
Well, Korpisalo was like, don't put me in. But,
no, but after that first, did you expect Bobrovsky to come out for period two, game one against?
I thought Korpisalo was going to be out there and I thought he was never going to play for them again. But, I think you have to take the chance. You know, you have to give your players a chance. You've got to give your fans a reason to believe. And Florida's done that. I'll tell you, I wasn't crazy about the Strahlman deal. You know, I'm happy for him. Anytime anybody gets paid, good for you.
5.5, 3-year deal.
Yeah, 16.5. I thought that was big, but you know what? Florida brought the checkbook. You can't fault the organization for coming out and saying, we're going for it. And I think Quenneville, I think he's a difference maker. I really do.
Other teams around the NHL that have made headlines, San Jose Sharks, and the Erik Karlsson comes back, Joe Pavelski leaves. I know those are the two big headline stories, Elliot, but I want to get your thoughts on Kevin LeBanc.
I had a lot of texts that day.
I want to get your thoughts on Kevin LeBanc, and it's a one-year, $1 million deal. Now, Chris Cherney comes to mind right away, players in San Jose that have, you know, taken their QO or something close to it, and then, you know, tripled their contract after a productive season. Listen, this is Kevin LeBanc betting on himself. Was it 56-point season?
Yeah.
Like a $1 million contract? I understand that San Jose is up against it. This one was an interesting one, but I do respect the fact that this guy's betting on himself.
You know, I got to tell you, like, Doug Wilson, that guy, he gets done what he needs to get done, and he makes people crazy. Like, I'm off right now. Like, this is, we're coming in Thursday morning, we're doing this, but generally you and I, we're rumors at this point. We're working on our tans, right? Yeah. Like, that's what we're doing.
You're usually working on your beard, but you're clean shaven.
You know why?
You know why?
I'll tell you, I had something I had to go to Wednesday night where I had to shave it off.
Fair.
But it was getting, it's coming back.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry, it'll be there. Last summer I didn't have to shave once. This summer I'm going to have to shave twice. One's done and one's still to come. And by the way, I think I'm going to shave my head too. I'm going to go beard and bald.
You're doing that look?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, UFC style. Look at you. Oh, yeah. Elliot.
I'm going to be very intimidating.
Oof, panel next year. Look out.
So
get some ink, bud. I got a good guy.
No. I'm not, I would like to, but I've never had anything that I really wanted to tattoo on myself enough to do it. I'm not against it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to find something meaningful. Anyway, San Jose, so that day when that happened, like, my phone blew up with people just furious. And some of the people were agents because they're like, that's a killer comparable now. Like, LeBanc, 56 points, $1 million. Like, you're looking at it from a client point, and now teams are going to say, hey, he's making $1 million.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you can't let that team do that. It's a unique situation. But anyway, like, they were.
Essentially, that's him taking his QO.
Yes. So some agents were really annoyed at that. And then there were teams that were mad. They were like, you watch, he's going to sign in January, some big deal, and then San Jose will get away with it again.
Probably. Yes. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, if he has a big, it's exactly what's going to happen.
If he has a big season, which many of us expect with that release, I mean, come January, okay.
I can imagine Doug Wilson golfing in California or Arizona and just laughing at everybody being so furious at this contract. People went crazy when they heard about that deal.
Well, the interesting thing about LeBanc, and we just talked about offer sheets a second ago with the heavyweights, you know, there was that thought out there that it was the second tier guys that would be more attractive because the compensation might not be that high by way of pick. But you may price some teams out. A lot of people looked at players like Kasperi Kapanen.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin LeBanc was the one that I looked at. And I said, you know, here's a 50, almost 60 point
56
score,
points. Like,
and here's, you know, your 20 goal guy. San Jose's up against the cap with the Karlsson deal. Like, you just signed Meyer. Joe's going to come back for $1.50 plus bonuses or whatever. LeBanc might be the most attractive guy.
You know what that says to me? He's like Braden Point. He wants to stay where
he is. Wants to stay.
Yeah. He likes it where he is.
I guess if you're a player, you look at it and you say, where am I going to be happy?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to be happy playing into May and June for less money? Or am I going to be happy calling it a year in April for more?
Mm-hmm.
And LeBanc's a guy that obviously is content to play for less money into May and maybe June. I just like it. I just like players that They gamble on themselves.
Let's just see what the next contract is.
In January. what do you make of Pavelski leaving, going to Dallas? A great pickup for Dallas.
I think Dallas getting Pavelski and Perry. Look, they got blown out in game 7. I know it was double overtime, but they didn't touch the puck all night.
Yeah.
They needed scoring. They're really good. You know, we just talked about the Pacific. Look at the Central right now.
Outside of Minnesota, I can see any of those teams making the playoffs.
Is Dallas the best team in the Central after St. Louis right now?
I don't know. I don't even know that, you know, here's the thing. I don't even know that St. Louis is the best team.
You want to know, like, it's funny. Like, they're kind of getting disrespected. People are saying, like, they're not necessarily the favorite.
Half-season cup winners. Yeah.
You know, first of all, they just won the cup.
Like, I know.
I'm good with putting them as the number one team in that division. And they're going to come back with a lot of the same group. I, by the way, had a great conversation, short one, with Binnington at the awards about, are you still going to be hungry? Like, after everything you got to, are you going to be the same guy? And he was really good. He said, that's a good question. And he gave a good answer, but he said, like, life usually finds something to throw at you to make sure you're still hungry.
Mm-hmm.
But it was obvious that even he was wondering about that, about himself.
Any idea what his ticket's going to end up?
No, I honestly don't know. I assume like they're going to go short term and leave it open for a couple years. That's what I assume. But Doug Armstrong said, look, he said about Craig Berube, we're going to work this out. And they worked it out. And Berube is making a good number. I think he's around 3.1. He said about Binnington, we're going to work it out. So, you know, I base it on that. If he said they're going to work out Berube and they did, I assume they're going to work out Binnington.
We haven't talked about this.
But anyway, I was going to say, like, that division.
Outside of Minnesota, Chicago, and we're going to talk about Chicago here in a little bit, but Chicago's going for it again, and they've gotten better.
I like Dallas on paper.
Listen, I like Dallas because of the goaltending. I think they have the best battery. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think they have that best combination, and they'll do the 60-40 split, and they'll have two rested goaltenders going into the playoffs once again, and Bishop stayed healthy this time around. I don't know, and Miro Heiskanen, man. I mean, that blue line now is a killer.
Lindell,
John Klingberg. Like, that's a real nice blue line. Like, Dallas, there's a lot of reasons to be enthusiastic about Dallas.
You know who I think is also getting disrespected in that division? Nashville and Winnipeg.
It's just because we've seen them so much, we've seen them fail. And that's Winnipeg, all, but they're good teams.
You know, Winnipeg, you know, you look at their blue line, they lost Trouba and they lost Myers. I'm curious to see how that's going to affect them. Those guys were horses for them.
Yeah, how do you think Winnipeg does next season?
I think they're going to have a lot of talent.
How much of it revolves around Patrick Laine bouncing back?
Well, Laine is a whole big discussion, right? Because he's the one guy who seems to want a short bridge of all these guys. And he didn't leave happy last year. And we've talked about this. Some of that was his own fault. He wasn't as good as he could be. And I think he chafed under some of the leadership there. Like, the guys at the top of that food chain are hard-driving guys. They expect you to buy into the program. And I think that they felt he didn't buy in enough. And I think he felt that some of the things that they wanted were ridiculous. So you got to bridge that too.
Curious to see what happens with them and the rest of the Central. We step away when we return. Nazem Kadri of the Colorado Avalanche on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali, complete with the world's first six-function multi-protocol gate. What's a six-function multi-protocol gate, you ask? Well, it's a cool feature that adapts to whatever you need. It auto-opens from buttons on the key fob, the cockpit, and the tailgate itself. It's got a load stop to prevent long items from sliding out of the cargo box and turns into a full width step for easy access. An inner gate allows you to insert a platform into the cargo box to create a shelf to two separate items and becomes a work surface with a 12-volt power outlet. So, no matter what you're moving or where you're going, the multi-protocol gate gives you options. GMC Sierra Denali. We are professional grade. Elliot, we're pleased to be joined by someone who's now a new member of the Colorado Avalanche and is now also a new member of the Parents
Society
Club. We'll start off with a congratulations to Nazem Kadri. Naz, are you prepared to be more tired and more happy than you've ever been in your life?
I think so. I mean, I've been preparing myself for some time now, and it's just finally nice that she's here and I got to meet her.
Well, congratulations. This is wonderful for your family. We'll start the interview off with that. This is fantastic for you. And listen, we hope everyone's healthy and everyone's happy and everyone's good.
Everyone is. So thank you.
That moment, Naz, on the first time you held your child, what was that like for you?
It was words can't even explain. It was, like the world stopped. And, I forgot about everything else that was happening. And, it's almost a miracle. So blessed that she's, healthy and happy. And, I'm looking forward to taking care of her.
And you're going to make sure she's a right-hand shot too, right?
I haven't decided yet. I guess I might be throwing a club in her hand instead of a hockey stick. We'll see.
Well, listen, thanks so much for this. And again, congratulations. Of course, the big story of the offseason, the trade with the Colorado Avalanche. At what sense did you think that there was a chance that you might be moved?
Probably, a week before July 1st, just started to get the indication. And I didn't think that Toronto was shopping me around. At least I didn't really get that impression. But I figured, a lot of teams were calling about me and were very interested. And that was flattering to hear, but a couple of days before it really started to pick up, and talking to my agent, I figured that maybe, something could happen, and the team was, very interested in picking me up, and kind of just accepted it. Obviously, it was hard at first, but, with all the variables in place, Colorado being a great team, Denver being a great city, now that the dust has settled, I'm actually looking forward to it.
Nazem, can you explain what happened with Calgary?
So what happened is they had a deal in place and they wanted me to move my no trade clause, but obviously for me it was no disrespect to Calgary or the Flames organization. I love their team and I love the direction they're headed. I just figured that had I declined, I would have had a better opportunity of being a Maple Leaf next year, and that's really what it came down to. I wanted to play for the Leafs next year. I wanted to be a part of that, and in hopes of declining that trade, I had aspirations of being a Leaf, and clearly that didn't happen. They had other plans, and I'm just happy to be moving to a great city with the great team, a great group of guys. I've talked to everybody in the organization, and they're ecstatic to have me, so it's nice to be wanted.
True or false, you are renting Tyson Berry's house and he is renting your house?
News travels fast, huh? I think that's the direction we're headed to. I met Tyson, walking through my place the other day. He's an exceptional dude. He's a real good guy and a real stand-up guy. And it's unfortunate that, we couldn't be teammates because I feel like we're pretty similar in terms of personalities. But, that definitely has potential of happening.
One of the great scenes of the last 5 years in the NHL was Seth Jones and Ryan Johansson meeting at an airport and having that conversation after having been swapped for one another. What was the conversation like between you and Tyson Berry?
We just talked about life and obviously the city. I was giving him some advice about Toronto and he was doing the same about Denver. So, it actually, made me feel a lot more comfortable talking to him and knowing what the Avalanche is all about and what playing there is all about and just all the details. So that certainly made me feel a lot more comfortable.
I'm always curious what players say to other players about advice on playing with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Because everyone goes into, I know what to expect. I know what it's like. And then when they exit, it's always, wow, I had no idea it was going to be like that. What type of advice would Nazem Kadri give someone who's joining the Maple Leafs?
I got nothing but love for the city. You guys know that. Yep. And, I had nothing but good things to say. They've always treated me well. The fans have respected me. Well, most of them anyways. But, I love the city of Toronto. I love being a Maple Leaf. And, they spoil you too. It's a great organization, a lot of class, with some great people part of it. So, I just told him all those things and tried to make him, more comfortable. But at the same time, he understands that he's going to be under the microscope a little more.
Nazem, we've seen you grow up here. You were drafted high in the first round. Till now, we saw you arrive as, the old line, you go from a boy to a man. And it played out, you wore your heart on your sleeve, You loved being a Maple Leaf. There was never any question of how you felt about anything or where you stood about something. I'm just wondering, in the last, I guess, decade, you know, what are the things that you're going to remember the most, both maybe on and off the ice, about how life changed for you while you wore this uniform?
There's so many good memories. I'd keep you guys here all day if, you know, I started to dive into that. But just the evolution, seeing the team grow, you know, meeting the staff, the medical staff, equipment staff. I mean, just all great group of guys. And, you know, outdoor games, playoff games, you know, the Maple Leaf Square with all the crazed fans out come playoff time. I mean, that was something that was pretty unbelievable and something I'll always share.
You know, Elliot mentioned a second ago, you always played with your heart on your sleeve. Like, the one thing we know about Nazem Kadri is you played hard every single game and you weren't shy about defending yourself and defending teammates. And I'm sure that Rasmus Ristolainen is glad to see that you're gone from the Atlantic right now, because he's probably seen enough of Nazem Kadri. What is it like going into a team like Colorado? Because we've seen, you know, you and Gabriel Landeskog go at it a couple of different times. What's that scenario like, where you walk into the room, you know that you and Landeskog, whenever you play Colorado, would go at it head to head? I don't know if that's a Kitchener London thing from the OHL, but it's very much a thing in the NHL. What's that dynamic like, Nas?
I mean, you got to understand, with hockey players, it's, you know, when altercations happen on the ice, he usually stays on the ice. You know, Landy was one of the first guys to reach out to me and welcome me to the team. So, you know, obviously a very classy guy, and I've heard a lot of great things about him. So, you know, I think as players, you understand that what happens on the ice stays on the ice. And, you know, usually, in my experiences, those pesky guys on the ice are usually the best guys off the ice. So, you know, I'm looking forward to meeting him and getting to know everybody on the team.
Nazem, what was the best call or text message you got from a current or former teammate when it broke?
I wouldn't even be able to pick out one. There were so many players that I've played with, and, you know, everybody from the organization reaching out and, you know, wishing me the best. And, you know, it was pretty heartfelt, and it's something that, you know, I can definitely appreciate. But, you know, I've been playing with the team for a long time, and I've built a lot of great relationships, and those are ones that are going to last a lifetime.
Well, you're obviously being very positive. You know, are there any hard feelings at all about the way this came down?
I mean, I understand it's a business. You know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, you want people looking back on it and, you know, for me, it's about, you know, going into next season with a bit of a chip on my shoulder. I know what I'm capable of, and, you know, I want to, you know, just prove a point more than anything. So, you know, I'll be looking to have a big year next year.
You know, Naz, we know that it's different playing in the Western Conference as opposed to the Eastern Conference as a defenseman. Is it as profoundly different to play in the West as a center?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've been playing in the league a long time. For a young kid, you know, I'm sure it would be a bit of a change, and it would be tougher to adjust to. But for me, you know, I've been playing for years and against those teams for years, and the Western Conference isn't, you know, the game of hockey has been evolved into the speed and skill game, so it's not, you know, these big, heavy teams. I think teams are starting to understand don't do as well as they maybe used to. So, you know, the thing I got to get accustomed to is obviously, you know, the altitude, traveling a little bit more. But, you know, that's all something that normally in life I'm pretty good at making adjustments. And this is one of those things.
Before we let you go, I want to ask you about the Nazem Kadri Foundation. August 8th, you're doing a charity event at Sunningdale Golf Club. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so the Nazem Kadri Foundation is, you know, obviously my foundation. I started years ago. Hosted tournaments locally in my hometown for about 6 years now, raised over $1 million for local beneficiaries. And this year we're focusing on mental health and, you know, just trying to help people out that need help. I feel like I've been put on this pedestal to help the community, and, you know, that's something that's real dear to my heart. So, yeah, the Nazem Kadri Foundation's always done a good job in raising money and helping the less fortunate.
You're a stand-up guy. Thanks so much for stopping by today. Best of luck with the charity events. Best of luck being a new dad as well. The bags under your eyes, I'm sure, will be well earned, as are all the parents out there. And I wish you nothing but the best in Colorado, Nazem.
All right, guys. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Nazem Kadri. So the headline there being your question about the Calgary Flames and Nazem Kadri not waiving his no trade to go to one of the two teams in Alberta. I thought his explanation was interesting.
It was. I mean, all you do is you ask a question, you hope somebody gives you an honest answer, right? And he gave an honest answer, which is definitely appreciated. It's pretty obvious that this was a situation where he was going to say, I'm not going to make this easy on you to make me leave Toronto. I don't want to go, so you're going to have to take the control out of my hands, which they eventually did. You know, I'm happy he's still having his charity event. I think that's very important. Just because you leave a city doesn't mean you have to leave your imprint behind. You can still do things that you want to do that way. You know, he said at the end, I'm going to have a chip on my shoulder next year. This is a guy who did not want to go, but obviously the Maple Leafs felt it was time for him to go.
He's always played with a chip on his shoulder, going back to his days with Kitchener in London, the OHL, and he will have that extra incentive this season, and he's playing on a really exciting team. Like, to me, the Colorado Avalanche last couple of seasons has been destination programming. Like, when I'm flipping around and I get to an Avs game, like, that's it. I push back and I watch. Like, it's in a really exciting team, and he's probably going to be in a better situation positionally than he was with Toronto. He was always playing behind John Tavares and Austin Matthews, and listen, in Colorado, he's the number two guy down the middle, right behind Nathan MacKinnon, and it's an exciting squad that he's going to.
That is a team that is built to win. They could have a really long window. A really long window.
Because their blue line is young.
And so are their forwards. Good. Like Landeskog, it seems like he's been around for 1,000 years. He's still a young guy. MacKinnon is still a young guy. Rantanen is just coming off his ELC. And as you mentioned, they're D, and it looks like it's going to get even better. You know, Girard, Makar, Byram, they're all still new.
Connor Timmins, keep throwing him in. Don't forget him.
And like, they've got a shot here to be a good team for a really long time.
Well, they've got MacKinnon on the best contract in the NHL, period.
And, you know, they went after Panarin. They offered him 4 times 12.5. And now Adrian Dater said it got to 6 times 70, which is a little over 11. And then they were willing to do a 7th year at 12.5. But one of the things they were worried about was term, because they've got to do, well, they don't have to worry about Barry now because they traded him, but they know they've got to do Grubauer and Landeskog, and they've got to do Rantanen now. So Grubauer and Landeskog and Makar are in 2 years, and you've got MacKinnon in 4 years. So they were afraid of term, but they could have a really long run. Like, that Central Division next year,
it's awesome.
It's going to be murder.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. They're sending 5.
So you're saying that those two Western teams are in big trouble? Those two specific teams, I mean, are in big trouble that don't finish top 3?
When you look back at Nazem Kadri and his time with the Toronto Maple Leafs, what's going to stand out to you? Like, what's going to be the lasting image or thought of Nazem Kadri's time in Toronto?
Remember what we talked about with Luongo, that there were low moments and he pulled himself up? Like, that's what I think about with Kadri. You know, hey, there was the Lou Lamoriello suspension. There was times he got sent down to the minors. You know, all that stuff. He beat it back. Like, he became a really good NHL player. Whatever hurdles were in his way, he was like, F you, I'm going to plow through this. And I think that's really professional. It's unfortunate the way it ended, the suspension for the 2nd year in a row. Like, you feel obviously that the team lost the trust and it was time to move on. But I think he was a guy who really liked being a Maple Leaf a lot. To me, he's proof. And Marner could even be more proof. Like, there are a lot of Toronto guys that didn't think they wanted to play in Toronto. Now, I know technically Nazem Kadri is not a Toronto guy, but he's a Southwestern Ontario guy. Those guys are proof that your family can be around here and you can still be a successful player. I think a lot of young people doubted that that could be the case. They'd say it's better for us if we go away because we won't be as successful with all our friends here, with all our family here. Marner and Kadri are proof that if you're a pro and you are single-minded and focused, that that is BS. And that is probably the lasting legacy of both those guys, that you should not be afraid of having kids from the region as Toronto Maple Leafs when they're young. Now, this Marner thing, I don't know how it's going to work out.
Sure.
But still, if he stays in Toronto, and again, I say it for the thousandth time, I think he ultimately wants to stay and they ultimately want him to stay. He is going to go down as the best Maple Leaf ever from the city and maybe the best Maple Leaf ever. But Kadri is going to be high on that list. And that's what they are going to change, the belief that Ontario or Toronto kids can't handle playing for this team at a young age.
One of the things that I always enjoyed about Kadri's career, and it was quite recently as well, when Mike Babcock focused him to becoming more of a defensive forward and a shadow. We have so seldom see shadows in the NHL. I remember once upon a time, every team had a shadow, and you were going to live in the other star's hip pocket.
Yeah.
And he became that, whether it was against Connor McDavid, whether it was against Joe Thornton. We all can recall the beard fight. But he led people to have a conversation about Nazem Kadri and the Selke Trophy, and can you win the Selke Trophy if you don't kill penalties?
Yes,
like,
I remember
that. He really turned himself into an outstanding two-way player to the point where we were saying, well, how much did Datsyuk play on the penalty kill exactly? These were the conversations we were having about Nazem Kadri, and it was only two seasons ago.
I know.
Like, that's the kind of player he turned himself into.
You know, like, Gentile doesn't win the Stanley Cup. You need guys like Nazem Kadri. Like, he got himself into that whole situation with Thornton was unbelievable, and some of the stuff with Crosby was absolutely hilarious. But, you know, he was funny to watch. Like, you know, some of the stuff he would do on the ice, I thought it was just hilarious. And, you know, the one thing that Colorado really could benefit from here, too, is that he didn't learn the lesson from the suspension the year before. This is the ultimate shock to the system. And if that's what does it, Colorado is going to benefit.
Okay, you mentioned Artemi Panarin a couple of moments ago. Didn't sign with Colorado, obviously signed with the New York Rangers, who all of a sudden have turned it around. And the Metro just got better at the draft with 1-2 going to the Devils and the Rangers. And Artemi Panarin, there's another shark in the water in that division. Your thoughts on Panarin?
Well, people find this vomit-inducing when I say this, but the NHL needs the Rangers to be important. And it was not lost on people who live in New York City that as the New York Knicks were striking out on Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and they were going to Brooklyn, the Rangers landed the biggest fish. And that was not the biggest offer he was getting. You know, New York said there was a limit. They went to their limit and he took it. It's a big deal for the Rangers. It's a big deal for the NHL. You know, you look, they've got Trouba. They got him. They got Kapokako, who they're really excited to get.
Vitaly Kratsov.
Kratsov is coming.
Yeah, Philip Hedl, Adam Fox, like Igor Shishkorkin. Like, it's
holy big.
Smokes.
It's big.
Like, what they've been, Gordon's been able to do, listen, a lot of it, Gordy Clark, you always got to give the nod to the scouts in situations like this, but wasn't it about 5 minutes ago they were writing a letter to their fans explaining how they're throwing in the towel?
Yeah, and here you go. Like, they're exciting now. And again, we've talked about all divisions. Look at that Metro next year. Like, I think Washington's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm. Never sleep on the Penguins with Crosby and Malkin.
No, you never sleep on them.
All of a sudden, Devils pick up P.K. Subban. Hughes is there.
And they're trying to convince Hall to stay.
The Battle of the Hudson is a really big deal again because of who's there now.
Rangers are better. You know, the Islanders in Carolina, you're talking about a second-round team and an Eastern Conference finalist. Philly, the expectation is, like, hey, the wait's over. Like, they are expected to be there.
And they're behaving like classic Philadelphia once
like
again.
No excuses.
Yeah.
No excuses. Like, I honestly look at the Central.
Yeah.
And I think that's the toughest division in the NHL next year. The Metro, I don't necessarily think the teams 1-8 are the best, but I think they're going to be extremely competitive. Like, I don't think they have the best teams, but they may have the most competitive division.
I think you look at the Central and you can say, okay, I can see who's not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can say the same thing about the Metro.
Like, I think everyone's going to be in it. To me, Washington is the best team. I mean, Columbus, we don't know. Like, I would say
Columbus is going to be fine, dude.
You do, right?
Well, listen, look, Jones, Werenski, Atkinson, Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like,
yeah, they got good players.
They still have players.
I'm just saying, I don't know.
I don't think it's like, oh, splash down to the bottom of the pool here for Columbus. I think Columbus could be all right.
And they're going to play hard. But, like, I think Washington's the best team, but I don't see anyone who I'd say they're out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that division is going to be like a dirty street fight all year. All year.
I just look forward to the Rangers and the Devils games again.
Yeah.
Because now there's the Hughes-Kako sidebar to it. I was privy to one team's top three.
Mm-hmm.
Kako, Doc, then Hughes.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know about that either. I'm just saying that was one team. But you're right. The Rangers, all of a sudden now.
That division next year is going to be
rebuilt. Done. The players are there. Yeah. Now it's just, you know, put water and it's going to be good. Okay. Another team that's on the horizon, on the rebuild because it's only been a couple of seasons and they still have their primaries in place. But where are you at with what Chicago is doing?
You know, the Jukka Harju deal, that surprised a lot of people. Now, after it got done, I had a number of teams tell me that Chicago had made him very available around the draft. And for whatever reason, Chicago did not value him as highly as the rest of the league did. And it always makes you wonder because they know the player the best. They felt, and Stan Bowman did allude to this on his post-trade conference call with Boqvist and some of the other prospects they had.
Ian Mitchell.
They'd move those guys ahead
of
Jukka Harju. So I think it's pretty interesting, and I'll be curious to see how this all turns out. But the team that had this player did not value him as highly as the rest of the league.
And they just drafted him a couple of seasons ago with the draft in Chicago.
And that was the day they made all their big moves. That was the crazy day.
So they bring in Alex Nylander from the Buffalo Sabres.
Mm-hmm. Needed a fresh start.
Needed a fresh start. It's not as if Chicago hasn't given other players fresh starts. Most recently, Dylan Strome. And that's worked out splendidly. You see what happens with Alex Nylander. But Robin Leonard comes in. Olli Maatta comes in. Like, this isn't a team that's interested in tearing it down and rebuilding. This is a team that, when we talk about the Penguins with 87 and 71, they're just saying, we still have Tate, still have Kane, still have Keith, still have some fumes from the rock and roll days. Let's reload.
Leonard's an interesting one, too. Like, we talked earlier in the podcast about LeBanc.
Yeah.
You know, Corey Crawford's in the last year of his deal. It's been a tough road for him health-wise last couple of years. There's a number of teams that said they would not be surprised if an extension comes for Leonard in Chicago sometime during the year if it goes well.
Is this just, I'll just ask you bluntly, is this a fight for a contract between Crawford and Leonard? And one of the two is going to come out as a number one goaltender for the Blackhawks next season, and this year is going to be the fight between the two of them.
Yeah, probably. I think there's something to that, but I had a number of people tell me they would not be surprised if this is just step one of Leonard in Chicago. Be interesting to see. It's too bad the way that happened with him and the Islanders. Like, you're never necessarily going to get it out of Lou Lamoriello about what happened.
Right.
And by the way, I should mention the whole Marner's offer sheet thing we talked about before with Islanders. The most interesting comment I got about it is, if Lou Lamoriello was going to do this, do you think it would be this public?
No.
Which I thought was really interesting.
No, he's Area 51.
Yes.
Like, that's Lou.
But, you know, it's unfortunate. It was such a great story last year, Leonard, the Islanders, his beautiful speech at the awards.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate that it worked out this way, but it's business.
It's business, and the Buffalo Sabres doing business as well. They pick up the defenseman, as you mentioned, Henry Jukka Harju. Colin Miller comes in, another nice little bit of business.
Yep.
And you wonder, because I don't think he's done, what's next for Jason Bottrell?
Well, all the talk is about Rasmus Ristolainen, and I just heard the price was very high around the draft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the O'Reilly trade didn't work out well for them, so I think they're careful about, you know, trading somebody else who becomes a big piece in another place. We've talked about the rumblings with him in Tampa Bay, but I think he's got him out there, and we'll see where it goes. Like, there's one guy out there, and he just says this is his own opinion, not based on anything he heard, but he could see them targeting someone like Anthony Mantha from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
No idea if Detroit's willing to do anything like that, but they could see that being the kind of player that Buffalo would target. you know, we'll see. But he's definitely out there, but I've heard the price is high.
What are your thoughts on Matt Cullen, who calls it a career after 21 seasons in the NHL?
What a great run. You know, I totally forgot that the year they won the Cup in Carolina, he was like third on playoff scoring for them. I totally forgot that.
Corey Stillman was number one.
Yeah.
I think he was my Conn Smythe guy that year. Like, Stillman was so good that year. But you're right, Matt Cullen was.
It had to be Cam Ward.
I know, it's a sexy story.
Here's my funny Matt Cullen story.
Eric Staal, too, yeah.
So a few years ago when he was playing in Nashville, I asked him, is this going to be it for you? And he goes, yeah, I'm thinking about it. This could probably be it. And so I put it in 31 Thoughts, and his agent, Pat Morris, called him and said, you never say that. Like, if a reporter asks you that, you never say that. So every time, like, he told me that too. So every time that we saw each other in the future, I said, I'm not even going to ask. I don't want you to get in trouble with your agent. And he would always get a good laugh about that. What a run he had.
Yes.
What an awesome run.
Like, yeah.
You think, you know, hey, I'm going to play hockey. I'm going to last for the NHL in 21 years. Nobody thinks that.
You know what? A guy like him, and I always look at
three cups.
I always look at a guy like Andrew Cogliano this way. Guys that find a way to change their game to stay in it.
Yeah.
And that's what Matt Cullen was able to do. And that's why I think that Andrew Cogliano is going to stay in the game for a long, long time.
Yep.
Because listen, in this game more so than ever, it's the chameleons that endure. Sure, some of the superstars do as well, but it's the chameleons, the guys that, okay, this isn't working. I'm going to be this player now. Mm-hmm. And isn't that the story of Matt Cullen?
Absolutely.
The guy that can play up and down your lineup. Like, that's Matt Cullen.
Win a face-off, not, you know that he's there for 12 minutes and just deal with that.
Yeah. Congrats on
hell of a career.
A wonderful career for Matt Cullen. We mentioned New Jersey a couple of seconds ago, just sort of bouncing around here as we close out the podcast for the season. The future for Taylor Hall. You know, you mentioned, you know, the New Jersey Devils are, you know, listen, we're going to, this is the very public demonstration that this is not, you know, rebuild from the starting line, that this is a team that's moving the needle. This is a team that's bringing in Subban. This is a team that's got Hughes in a significant spot. 1-2 up the gut, him and Nico Hischier. Where are you at on Taylor Hall? Because he might just be poised to be next season's John Tavares.
See, the one thing people remind me about the Devils is that their owners own the Philadelphia 76ers in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been one of the more creative and daring teams of the last decade. So they think their default is don't be afraid. That it runs through the organization. Don't be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to assume that they're going to be bold. And they're going to be unafraid to try things. That's why I know there were some people who thought they might do an offer sheet, because that's the way their ownership
yep.
kind of thinks. I think you have to be honest with yourself. At some point in time, they're going to have to decide, A, do we really think he's going to come back? And then B, if we don't think he's going to come back, is it worth us to keep him and make a run to the playoffs? Like, I love the Wayne Simmonds contract. I thought that was a really smart move by them.
Mm-hmm.
I like the PK Gamble 3-year deal, basically what it is, $9 million a year. You take that 100 times out of 100. So I think they're unafraid. But you have to ask yourself those two questions. One, is he really coming back?
Mm-hmm.
And two, if he's not coming back, is it worth it to keep him to take the run to the postseason?
See, for me, it depends on what's out there. And I still think that there's value in giving those kids a playoff run.
I agree with that. You know, and we've talked about this too. Like, is the whole Kawhi thing going to change the way anyone looks at this?
Okay, I wanted to get to that because I wanted that to be last on our list.
We'll get to that in a second.
Let's get there.
I just want to close out with Hall is, I think just the Devils have to ask themselves, what's the most important thing?
Let's do the Kawhi Leonard thing because this podcast is based in Toronto. And the country was in basketball heaven, and I've never seen this country behave this way.
Everybody in Canada is a basketball expert
about that
now.
Sport, and I just know picking up my kids every day at school, every kid had a basketball, everybody was dribbling, it was mania. It was crazy, and it was fun, and it was a wonderful ride. Is there a lesson hockey can learn about Kawhi Leonard and his decision to join the Clippers?
Well, NBA free agency is insane. Like, you're sitting there and you're looking at what's coming across and you're like, really? So first of all, I wanted to say, like, we were flying to Vancouver last week. I took my family to go see Paul McCartney, And when the plane landed, that was just as the news was breaking. He was going to the Clippers. So I sent out a tweet, which when I looked at later, I was like, I must have been like bombed, even though I didn't drink on the plane because the tweet didn't make any sense at the end. But, you know, I just said, you know, I got no problem with this. And I think they should retire his number for the 1 year he stayed there. And my mentions after, they were a tire fire. Like people were either, yeah, I agree that you should retire it, or you losers, stick to hockey. Who gets retired after 1 year? Yeah, yeah. Pff, I don't care. It was funny. I was laughing reading all the responses. But now we find out he only signed for 2 years plus one, right? A player option, yeah, which don't exist in the NHL. So there have been times where the NHL has, you know, said quietly, and the players have been prepared for this, that right now the maximum contract is 7 years for if you go somewhere else, and eight if you re-sign your own player. The maxes in the NBA are 5 and 4. I wonder if the NHL ever looks at this free agency and says, we're not going to 5 and 4. Because I guarantee you, if they go to 5 and 4, this is going to happen in the NHL, where players are going to start lining up their free agency and saying, we're going together.
Kariya Salani happened there before.
Suter Parise.
But was that really, we're going as a pair, though? I mean, they both went at the same time.
And they didn't have the same agents, but there are people who believed months in advance that they were going together.
Okay, so Kariya Salani is the big one. That's Don Beasley.
Yeah.
And they go to the Colorado Avalanche on the low money 1 year deal. The way the salaries were working at that time, if they came in low, they could ring the bell the next year, I believe, the rate of $10 million. I'm doing this off the top of my head. So you think that there's a potential, because hockey players think profoundly different than basketball players. But you think that, let's say, the next time the CBA rolls around, if the league wants the $5 million, this could be one of those unforeseen circumstances should they go to a max 5 year.
Well, beginning of next season, we have the tour, right? The NHL player car wash.
Yeah.
We're going to know if the CBA is going to be reopened, at least at that time, by the players, because it's after September 1st and before the owners have the opportunity to do it. And I don't think it's going to be reopened. I think they're going to get a deal done, or at least move in that direction this summer. At least that's the way I choose to feel right now. But I just look at it like, this group of players is changing. They are changing. And if I just want to know, and I'm going to ask it, is the league going to be concerned if they drop the limits to say 4 and 5 years? Do they think more players will do this? Now, the super team's not the same in the NHL as the NBA, but could you imagine if, you know, four big players did that?
All of a sudden decided to go to the, New York Rangers.
It would be bananas.
That would be. And we'll see what happens this offseason. And speaking of the offseason, we will continue with the summer series of podcasts here on 31 Thoughts. You will hear from Joel Quenneville, the head coach of the Florida Panthers. You will hear from George Parros, the head of the Department of Player Safety. And you will hear from Steve Mayer as well, Chief Content Officer from the NHL. Before we wrap things up, by the way, I want to mention the music for season two, because Amel, our producer, does such a great job with this and doing deals to make sure we can, you know, present good music here on the podcast. Season two is on Spotify right now, so we encourage you to check all that out. Elliot.
I just want to say a couple shout outs. First of all, I met Kristen Ellison, big fan of the pod, always listens, and her beautiful boy Carter yesterday at an event I was at. And it was great to meet them, and I just wanted to say hi. I know you guys listen a lot. Last night, briefly, at a dinner in Toronto, I met a young man by the name of Matt Tom, who's going into his junior year at Princeton. He's a right-shot defenseman on the Tigers. I saw him play once last season. He was OHL drafted by Kingston, but he chose to go to the NCAA.
Right-shot defenseman.
Right-shot defenseman,
the
yes.
agents all say.
Undrafted in the NHL. I know he's got high hopes, and I just wanted to wish him a great season. It was great to meet him.
Excellent.
I'd like to say a couple thank yous. First of all, to all the people who listen. This podcast would not exist without the listeners, so we appreciate the fact that you guys all download this and listen. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your loyalty to the show. Jeff, I just want to say thanks again for a great second year. A lot of times when we do this on Wednesdays, I'm sleep deprived from writing the thing, and you take the ownership and leadership of it, and I really appreciate it. I thank you for your creativity coming up with stupid nicknames to try to confuse me on the one is right, three is wrong thing.
I love that. Yeah,
like, I really appreciate the effort and the work you put into it.
What about my good looks? You want to mention that too?
No, we're not mentioning those. We don't want to lie to the viewers. All right. Finally, Amal complains that I do not respect him enough. Amal, I have great respect for the job you do and the work you put in to make this thing sound good and add the music and all the clips you drop into. Thanks, Amal. Have a great summer, everyone.
Yes, have a wonderful summer on behalf of Elliot. And thanks. And listen, a lot of this podcast is predicated on the world's leading hockey blog, and that is 31 Thoughts. And listen, as much as, you know, taking the lead when you're sleep deprived and all that, just scalping ideas from your 31 Thoughts column. Let's just be honest about this. I want to thank a lot of people, most notably anyone who sent me kind notes and kind thoughts. Listen, I had a challenging year. My father passed away. My friend Colton passed away. And my employers here at Rogers were wonderful in giving me as much time off as I needed to deal with those things. At the end of this season, though, at the end of the year, our family welcomed our new addition, and that is Jordan, whom we adopted, went through a long process with Children's Aid to get there next to almost 5.5 years. But our family now is complete, and thanks to everybody who sent along kind notes for all of those things, whether I was in a position where I had just lost either a parent or a friend or had just welcomed someone new to our family. Thank you so much for all of your kind words and kind thoughts. And that includes you, Elliot, and you, Amal, as well. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for a wonderful season. As talented as you are as compassionate as well. And that's it. 31 Thoughts, the podcast, is over, sort of. The summer series, that continues. Joel Quenneville, Steve Mayer, and George Parros. Enjoy your summer. It's okay not to think about hockey, too. Go do other stuff. Go away. It's like the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. What are you doing? You're still here? Go away. Go away.
There's a moment in every day where I start to float away. And I go back and I go back to summer. Summer. Where we parted to the top of our lungs. And all the stupid songs we sung. And I go back and I go back to summer. Summer. Where we sang like ooh la la la, ooh la la la. Ooh la la la, oh yeah.
My eyes, the sun shines through.
New point of view.
And it takes me back
to
dancing on the beach and lights in the sky. Love in my heart, I just can't deny. Takes me back
to summer.